It's supposed to go mastery, impact, profitability. Mastery, you get really good at something, you hone your skills. Impact, you use your skills to add value to a certain audience, and then profitability, monetization comes.
Thank you for tuning into the Isaac Velez Gonzalez Show. I'm your host, Isaac, bringing you an authentic perspective into the inner workings of the world. Today's message is one you won't want to miss. So let's get straight into today's episode. Welcome back, everybody, to the Isaac Velez Gonzalez Show. Thank you all for tuning in. Today marks another of the episodes of our interview series where we bring on a new perspective, a different perspective, to share a bit about what they know about the world, what they've learned from all of the trials and tribulations that they've gone through. These conversations aren't meant for you just to hear two people talking about a certain topic or topics, but for you to start to visualize how you can take the lessons that someone else lived through and apply them to your life, how you can use experience as leverage to add value to your life, and really listen to, again, what's being said behind the messaging, the stories that go through this, how you can interpret them and use them to your advantage. And today's guest is no different, because they are someone that's going to bring a lot of value, a lot of experience, and a side of perspective that's just going to help you become the hero of your own story, develop into the maverick that you want to be. So without further ado, let me bring on today's guest. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Isaac, thank you so very much for having me. What an epic introduction, and let's hope I can live up to the pressure you have created for me.
Well, Kevin, I think the best way to get started today would just be to tell the people a bit of your backstory and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so I was raised in a household by my mom and my grandmother. I didn't know my dad. I didn't meet my dad until I was 27. So obviously that plays a role in a young man's life for sure. When I was in high school, I knew pretty certainly that I didn't want to go to college, so I didn't bother going that route. After high school, I just worked a bunch of odd jobs. So I pumped gas at a local gas station. I was a personal trainer. I cleaned bathrooms and floors at a hospital, truck driver, forklift operator, fire academy, construction. Whatever was there, I would take a stab at because I needed to pay my bills. But I eventually got a job in a very lucrative industry that was very high paying. And I made six figures, but I still ended up sitting on the edge of a bed contemplating suicide a few years after that. And in the midst of all that, I started a podcast. And then in 2018, I left my full-time job and became a very broke entrepreneur, very broke podcaster, trying to figure out how to do all this. But I have been a full-time podcaster since 2018. And now that is what I do 7 days a week for our podcast. And I coach a bunch of other people on their podcasts as well.
So why don't you tell the people a bit about your podcast and kind of like, again, I think the podcast journey is very interesting because it's all about, and when you start, it's really about you, right? Like you're kind of just segmenting and like, how can I deliver value based on what I know, right? You're just narrating your own story. So what have you learned and what has developed through you storytelling and doing your own stuff on your podcast?
Maybe you'll resonate with this. It's helped me a lot with confidence. One of the most scary things on the planet is talking about your thoughts openly to the possibility of criticism and judgment. And at this point, I've done that for over 2,000 episodes between our show and other shows. So it's taught me a lot about confidence. It's taught me a lot about understanding that you don't always have to have the exact perfect thing to say every single time. And I think people really appreciate vulnerability, and they really appreciate you working through the thoughts with them as they listen. That's been a big thing. And then I would say the biggest lesson for me, Isaac, is from day to day, progress is invisible. From year to year, progress is impossible to miss. I learned that in podcasting, but you can think about that with anything, right? You start a diet, you're exercising, you're doing all the right things. Not a lot changes day in and day out. Sometimes it actually goes in the opposite direction. I tend to gain weight when I start dieting. It's not real, but from day to day, that progress looks invisible. But week over week, month over month, year over year, that progress is then impossible to miss. So I think a podcast or anything that creates mile markers of perspective is really, really valuable to learn that lesson.
I think podcasting itself, but content creation as a whole, when it really came out, you know, you had like the influencers, like people that kind of like, you know, they had this perspective and people liked them, and then they just created content and did well. But I think over time, especially since the market's more saturated now, content creation and podcasting are businesses. You know what you describe as a business cycle. Like Your podcast and my podcast can be similar, but if you name it better and it's more eye-catching, you're going to get more eyes than I am. Or if your content is better, more of your listeners are going to spread it to other people versus mine. And so it then becomes like, again, you're sharing your message, but it's like you're also held to a higher standard. Because if I go back and I listen to your first episode and we listen to my first episode, there is going to be 9 and 8 differences. Not only, just ignore the content, just in filler words alone. I know. Yes. I said the word right after every, I think it was like 237 times in like a span of 10 minutes. And it's ridiculous, right? Right there, you see? No, but I just don't. But I was saying that word consistently. That was one of the biggest things. And I didn't notice it at the time. But in business, you have to be willing to make those little changes and kind of build upon it, right? You have the books of the Lean Startup where you are constantly reiterating what's the minimum that you can do in terms of going to market, right? So you have to put the maximum effort in those things. And so yeah. I kind of want to highlight me saying right now, because it just, you see how you notice it because I mentioned it.
Yeah.
It's this priming that I think is very interesting. And yeah. So again, it's not something I do now, but if you kind of compare it and now that I put it into perspective, it's more noticeable. And that's what makes it more important, as well as I believe you noticed that as well in whatever your biggest issue was when you first started creating the content, when you first started putting most of your time into the podcast.
Yeah, one of the challenging things is when you're first starting something, you kind of have no idea what you're doing. And like you said, you rely on whatever your railings are. So for some people, their railings are filler words. For other people, their railings are not having their camera on. Whatever it is for you, it's like that in multiple areas of life. It's not just the podcast or content creation, it's business and all that. One of the things that I have found, Isaac, I've seen this very, very often when it comes to just building anything. If you have the order wrong, that's when people get into trouble. It's supposed to go mastery, impact, profitability. Mastery, you get really good at something, you hone your skills. Impact, you use your skills to add value to a certain audience, and then profitability, monetization comes. That, I think, is something that we're a really good example of because we didn't make any money for the first 3 years. But we also weren't really trying to make money for the first 3 years because we knew it probably wasn't time yet. So there's something to be said about that too, I think.
Yeah, I believe that most people that if they want to start a podcast and it's not a part of the business that's already existing, you got to be willing to just enjoy podcasting and yes. willing to stick it out. Because podcasting has one of the lowest SEOs, I believe, to just organically grow. Like you need a lot of other things for a podcast to grow. Good social media content, good posting, good word of mouth, good titles and stuff like that. But without that, you're taking time away from something or without an existing brand. And so it's one of those things where we have to identify, is this something we want to do? Is this something that we're willing to pursue? And back to your earlier points, what were you talking about? Faith. You have to have faith in the process that you're doing. And now faith doesn't mean hope for the best and not do anything. Faith means how can I, with my current capacity, fulfill my current capacity? And while I'm doing that, look at the roundabout way of improving my own capacity. So that way I can improve it. And it's also, again, taking perspective. Again, what I mentioned at the beginning, these interviews aren't for you to be like, oh, that makes sense. Oh, this message is great. It's not about cheering and saluting whatever we're saying. It's like, how do you actually apply the facts behind it? Like again, if someone's listening to this, break down what you just said, right? You're talking about the mastery, the impact, the profitability. What do you have to do in order to get there? And it's like, you focus on these steps. The mastery is the biggest one. Because... Yep. If you don't do the other two, let's say you don't get to the other two, right? You just have the mastery of that skill. I believe that anyone that does a podcast for 3 years can very well go off in any role that requires a good speaking component, a good communication component, and they're 10 times better because of it. And results Yes. aren't always going to be in the field that you expected them to be, but work never goes unnoticed, especially when you continue to make it more effective and efficient.
Skills monetize forever. Skills monetize forever. And that means when you learn any sort of skill, to Isaac's point, it crosses over into another category and you never know. I had a moment where for most of my life, I lacked a lot of belief, self-belief. I had low self-worth. I didn't really believe that I was capable of much. And I was having a conversation at my gym recently with one of the managers and I left. And this was the first time I ever had this belief. And this was probably months ago at this point. I thought to myself, I'd make a really good manager of a gym. It's not because I've studied how to grow and scale a gym. It's not because I know that much about the industry. It's because I've learned so much about so many different things that now I actually feel like my personal development set point is high enough where I could add value there. And that was really, really, really strange. It's almost like when you learn, you're pouring a ton of sand on the ground. And the sand spreads out and it gets higher and higher and higher and higher. And that just is the suggestion of how much you're learning and how your personal development set point is raising. I know way more about business and money than I ever did. Yeah, I've studied a lot about business and money, but when you understand one silo, it does start to carry over to other silos. Awareness is infective. It connects, it crosses boundaries. So I couldn't agree more than I do.
And I think that that's where the argument becomes, you always have problems. Just the problems get, you get better problems as you progress.
Yes.
Because now that you have sand as a foundation, you know, you can go into the sand and you can build sandcastles everywhere. But then again, your attention is limited. And the reason that everything matters is because time is finite. So then it's how do you focus your energies on the right things, on the one sandcastle that you're trying to build, or maybe the two at most. And so then that's where I think it gets really interesting. Because there's an argument about getting to the first stage of success, about actually doing something and accomplishing it and iterating something successfully. But then the question is, was that the goal all along? Or do you have a bigger project? Or is there more that you want to build? And I think that's where it gets interesting too, because, you know, people talk about this idea of making it. But most people that make it, that's just the threshold that they initially wanted to break, but that was never the end goal. And so it's very interesting how I think of some people when they talk about success. Because they don't really get that they're not at the point they want to be because that was the goal. It's just a stepping stone on the way there. And that's why they get the success, because their aim is so high that they're just achieving these things point. And then where the other argument is, it's like, oh, people had this, they had this background, they had this, they're entitled to this, whatever. I fundamentally believe that the more you want something, that it becomes an actual need, the more you're willing to do whatever it takes. There's a prime example of this in psychology where it's like, if someone were to offer you $1 million to lose 30 pounds by the end of the year, or someone were to say, I'll kill you and your family if you don't lose 30 pounds by the end of the year, $1 million sounds great for most people, but the death factor is 10 times stronger. Why?
Yes.
Because there's an incentive to live, right? You don't want to die. And this priming idea, this example of like putting things in perspective of how much it's really a want versus how much do you need it? How big is the insecurity that you're willing to do whatever it takes to solve that insecurity goes a long way to determine who actually makes it in this world versus who thinks they want something, but they're not willing to put the inputs to get the outputs.
I need it. I need the podcast. I need everything that we've created. I traded everything for this, right? I almost died for this. So I understand, but I also understand now more than ever that a lot of us are convinced to set these massive world-changing goals, and your mind knows whether you really believe it or not. I know people say, shoot for the moon, if you miss, you're still amongst the stars. Your brain knows that's not really how it works. And if you set goals that you don't fundamentally believe in, at least a little bit, it's not going to happen. It's really good to set great goals, big goals, large goals. But I always try to say, set a goal that you actually believe you can accomplish with a certain percentage of yourself. So can I jump off the Empire State Building without a parachute and live? No, that's not going to happen. That's a 0% goal. Can I jump off of my bed onto the floor and live? Yes, that's a 100% goal. So set your goals based on the level of self-belief you have. You come across as somebody who has a very high level of self-belief, so I'm sure you have some very large, probably intimidating to many people goals. But it wouldn't serve you at the level it does if you didn't have the belief in the first place. You know what I mean?
There has to be a congruency with identity in what you're actually achieving. You're right. The delusion can be a very off-putting factor because, and that's a good point that you're highlighting too, because a lot of people miss that too. It's your level of belief has to be congruent with aims that you can achieve, because if it's not, you're just delusional and you never fully actually believe it, or you're just telling yourself a lie. And that's where I think the matter becomes, what do you really need to focus on? Because I would rather not decrease my aims and increase my self-belief than do one or the other. And so that's the argument of, am I willing to just up my game? You know, what am I actually doing? Or it's also putting yourself into proximity of people that are already achieving the things you want to do and seeing, are you willing to do what they do? Because I think part of the reason too that I have the high aims and I'm unwavering them is that I put myself in places where I see people that have gone either achieved those aims or gone past those aims. And I see what they've been willing to give up and have given up in order to get there. And I say, that's a price I'm willing to pay. Now, that doesn't make it easier. That doesn't make it more comfortable. That doesn't make it, you know, any shorter of a time frame. But because I saw it and I'm willing to do it, I can move forward. And so I think it's that factor of like, is it a delusion or can it be real? And that's, again, where you're kind of saying, too, like there's going to be moments that I might fail, too, because the second part of it is how much are you willing to go? Because like you said, you need the podcast to work, but how long can need last? You can need it for a year. And then after that, you're like, well, I can't do anything else. Like this might be too much. Then you don't need it anymore. So it's also how long are you willing to fight the game, right? There's the four outs, which is, you know, outwork, outlast, outstrategize, and outinnovate. And outlast, oftentimes than not, is really what kills most people. Because you can work hard for a year, 2 years, but after a certain point, for most people, it's just hard. It's very, very hard. And that's where you ask yourself, you know, how much are you willing to go for the things that you really say that you want?
Yeah. It's been unfortunate. We've been at it for, I started the podcast in 2017 and I went full-time in 2018. But over those 6 years, almost 7 years, very soon, we've seen a lot of people start and then quit. And it really is that. It is, if you can survive longer than everybody else, the cream eventually rises to the top. You can't add value to that many humans for that many years and not get some sort of result. But I do believe a lot of us, and I'm definitely guilty of this in the past for sure, we fall on what we used to do. So, well, we're doing an episode a week, and now we're doing an episode a day, but then you forget what got you there in the first place. And it's just that daily improvement, a little bit. 10 pages a day adds up. 10 minutes a day adds up. $10 a day adds up. One conversation a day adds up. I think we forget about that. I really, really, really do. And if you don't have that long-term vision, that future orientation, which I definitely did in the beginning, it's really challenging to understand how these things chain along over the long period of time, or you don't really fully understand how much can change in the next few years, right? A lot of the stuff that's happening right now, I didn't expect. And it's awesome. It's awesome and it's amazing and it's powerful and I'm pumped, but a lot of it I didn't expect. So I don't know if I could really predict where I'm going to be five years from today, not with clarity.
Yeah, the fundamentals have always been something that have been super important. You know, without the fundamentals, you kind of lose things of everything else. You lose sense of really what's going on, the bigger picture, because you stop doing the things that got you to where you are.
Yeah.
But then the flip side of that, the fallacy is you also got to make sure that you're not relying only on the things that got you to where you are, because they're just going to keep you where you are. So it's this like, how do you keep the threshold, but then look for ways to increase the threshold? And that's where I believe principles like the Pareto principle, right? The 80-20 is sufficient. Like 80% is on the fundamentals. It's continually doing the things that got you to where you are. You need to maintain that level. You can't let it fall. But the 20% is also, how do we innovate? How do we improve? You know, are our titles too long? Is the content too long? Are we bringing on the right kinds of guests for the audience that we're trying to reach? And that's just in the podcast setting. But if you take it out to another business, I mean, you can use a simple business like a coffee shop. You know, is the brews that we're doing serving the clientele that's coming in? Are our hours good for the people that come in? Would a drive-through be a possibility, because people are trying to always come and go? These are the kinds of questions that have to be asked, because if you don't ask them, another business will. And if the other business asks them and they're better at them than you, they're going to take away your customers. And that's the reality of business. And in life, it's the same way. If you don't take opportunities that come your way, someone else will. And so it's, again, you got to make sure you're staying in your own lane. Of course, right? You only have your life to live. But chances that come your way, you also have to kind of look at and be like, is this an opportunity with me? But then there's as much power in saying yes to the opportunities as there is in no. Because if your problem isn't saying yes to opportunities, it's saying no to opportunities, you're spreading your focus too thin. Because you can't go start your podcast in 2017 and then try to go start seven other side hustles, because that's just not going, it's just not going to work. And you know that, because you know you had to dedicate the time you did to get to where you are. So it's these kinds of that thoughts that there's a lot of counterbalances. There's a lot of like, if you go this way, then there's an opposite reaction. And that's kind of like this Newton's third law that really applies into a lot of facets in life.
And my business partner and I were talking last night about that. We said we definitely overgrew this year. And it's not terrible. We're fine. Everything's okay. But we definitely spread ourselves thin with the amount of things we're doing, and we just have to simplify. Expand and refocus. We've done a lot of expansion over the last year and a half, too. We need to go back to refocus because there is a lot going on. But that's the other thing, too, is when you do find the 20%, for me, the 20% is podcasting. So that's why we do 7 episodes a week. I have another podcast where I do 1 episode a week. And then this week I'm on 13 other shows. So I'll do 20 this week. For me, that's my 20% that brings 80% of the results. There's a power in getting the clarity of the 20%. And then there is a power in getting the consistency of actually executing on that 20%. And that's why a lot of people look, I don't want to say crazy, but Taylor Swift is doing a however many city/country tour right now. That's her big thing. That is her 20%. Performing, singing, writing, dancing, that's her 20%. So when somebody's really in it, you can tell, because it almost seems like that's the only thing that they do.
Yeah. Just a quick question. What do you do for your voice, to record that much time? Because I know sometimes me, I'm like drinking tea and got this lemon and honey going on. What do you do?
Yeah, you'll never see me without water. I always have I have my 40 ounces of water here. Somebody asked me that question recently. I probably don't do as much as I should, to be honest, because there was a time where I was doing probably 25 to 30 episodes a week. And I lost my voice and I got sick and my body was quite literally like, we're not going to do this. So for me, I don't do my first meeting until 10. So I don't really talk before 9 a.m. I wake up, I go to the gym, I'm silent. And my first call is at 10. So I think that's it. That's pretty much all I do. I drink a ton of water. I try not to scream. But other than that, I'm sure I could probably do a lot more than I am, Isaac, honestly.
I was telling a podcaster just the other day, there's this guy named Chris Williamson. He was on this guy that I know, his name's Mike Thurston, and they were doing a podcast interview together. And he was talking about how he actually preps himself. And so he kind of studies, like, he'll know, like, for example, chips, like the starch makes the voice stick, or like the saliva stick more, and like apples produce like a better like tonality. And I was like, it's interesting because he studied the podcasting, like just the sound itself of his own voice, like an athlete would look at it. And I thought that was pretty an interesting thing, because I mean, like when you go for like such a certain period of time, your voice just starts to dwindle and dwindle. And of course, like the longevity of like having done it for more time also helps. But I think there's sometimes when you just stack so much that your voice can only handle so much too. But I think that goes to a testament too of like the increase of capacity. That's definitely a lesson that you've learned and that I've seen. It's just when you're able to do a sustained work for a period of time and slowly increase that work, your sustained capacity becomes a lot higher. You know, an athlete that's swimming at a professional level or an Olympic level, they're going to be at a much higher capacity as someone that's just starting out, because they've slowly incremented that capacity over these years. And that's not just athletes, that's in business too, the capacity to make hard decisions, the capacity to do these things. And so what we see a lot of times is the ease. We see them doing the things and it looks great, so it looks even magical. But behind the scenes is these years and years of hard work, these years of like sweat and labor to get to those positions. Because when you train for so hard for something, whether it's in business or anything else that you do, those moments are the ones that actually count. If you're training for this presentation, like to speak to a group of people to try to influence and motivate change in their lives or give them a lesson they'll never forget, you're spending weeks and months on this presentation that might be 20 minutes. But every part of that presentation has to be, in a sense, perfect. It has to be deliverable in the way that you want to deliver it. And that's the part that I think is so interesting, but a lot of people don't focus on too. It's a lot of people that are successful and more successful than you and me, like not just you generally, they just want to get to this point where they're sustaining this capacity that's a lot higher than we're willing to sustain. So it's like, again, it's this kind of delusion that we have to get rid of. It's like, if we want to be at their level, we have to increase what they're doing to their level, you know?
This is not a joke. When I first started, I would have one coaching call a day and I literally had to take a nap after. I'm not even kidding. We would do one podcast episode, I would do one coaching call, and today I did like 5 and 4 interviews, and I still have 4 interviews to do after this. Yeah, I believe, this is one of my beliefs. So 2 thoughts. Imagine you're at an event and there's this world-class speaker on stage. It's the first time you've ever seen this speaker. And we have this thought that where this person is today is where they've been forever. So, oh, this person just, they've been speaking all over the world. Wow, that's awesome. Good for them. And we have this, many of us, unfortunately, we have this belief that where we are today is where we are forever. When in reality, that speech is probably been done 1,000 times. That is the best stuff that the speaker has. That's what they revert to. That's their training. My business partner and I have had those talks where we're prepping for a speech and we say, I want to use the best stuff that we have. We've done the best stuff so many times. We're really good at the best stuff. But if this was a speech, it would be drastically different because you and I have never spoken together. I don't know what your style is. You don't know what my style is. It wouldn't look as polished as it would if we had that in our repertoire. And we just pulled it out and said, all right, self-worth and self-belief, here we go. A lot of us, I believe, have fallen victim to that, thinking where somebody is today is where they've just been forever. They were born that way. That's where they've been for the last 20 years. When in reality, we don't see the first 20 years. And we're currently living in our first 20 years. It's this paradox that's really hard to get through.
But I think, too, that the importance of having that message you can go back to, it's a lot of time, it's new people consuming the stuff that you're saying. A lot of times people don't really understand the messaging of what's going on. And so that's the flip side, too. It's the most important message is the most value offering to the people that haven't heard it before. And there's beauty in both. I mean, there's beauty in having those things that you can speak, especially when you're speaking to people that you're trying to reach in a certain way. But there's also the beauty of like what we're doing right now. That's what I love a lot about the podcast interviews is, again, like what I was telling you earlier, we don't have the warm-up talk. We're not trying to talk about ideas. There's no script. There's a basic outline. The only thing that I usually go into an interview with is background information, just so I know, like, because I want to ask specific questions to what they're qualified in answering. Like, I'm not going to ask you to tell me stuff about an accounting thing because you're not a CPA. Like, that wouldn't make sense. That wouldn't be the most value. So the background information just lets me know where I can ask questions and where my bandwidth lies. But anyone can answer questions about personal development, professional development, because we take people that have a story to tell, and usually they're entrepreneurs. But again, it's nice to know that stuff. The second thing that I like to do is I make the podcast title before I do the interview. And so using the background information, I kind of like project where I think this person has been and where I think the conversation will go. And then from there, I just let the conversation flow. Yeah. And oftentimes I think there's the downside, of course, of like efficiency. Like if you have an outline and you have times of things, like you're going to be efficient in all those things, but you lack the element of how does this person actually converse? Because I think one skill that has to be highlighted in our show and how we do things, and I think a lot of podcasts benefit, is the conversational ability of how someone talks. Because I firmly believe that for you to actually believe in someone, what someone's saying, and for you to take their message, they have to appear in some regard that they're the same person online as they are offline. Because I don't think there's anything more demotivating for an online creator for you to see how they are on the camera, and then you run into them in person or see them do something in person, and the energy just drops. They don't look the same. The character is incongruent. That congruency in character really kind of attests to what kinds of people are speaking. And I think it creates that credibility, not in the experience sense, but just in, do they actually believe in what they're saying and what they're selling? Or are they just here to make money for themselves and then go home, you know?
Yeah, one of the reasons we stopped having guests was because of that. And again, we had many amazing guests, and we are still friends and mentored. Now we mentor some of the guests we've had, but there was an incongruency. There was a misalignment between the way someone would show up on the microphone and then the way they'd be the second we stopped the interview. And it was just, I cannot perpetuate a message that I don't believe is good for the audience. And if the person is different behind the scenes than they are in front of the scenes, I don't know if I can trust the message anymore. And that was really hard. That is to the detriment of our growth, for sure. I don't know. I don't want to do it. And I'm stubborn, and I want what's best for the audience. And to your point, you have to believe it. And I cannot believe it unless that's that person. That's that person's character. But I also understand a lot of people are playing characters online. It's almost like online is a different world. So a lot of people are playing characters that they aren't when they go back to real life. It's a weird time to be alive, and there's a lot of stuff that I don't think we've figured out yet as humans that we probably will continue to figure out. But yeah, to your point, we've definitely experienced that. We've definitely seen that. And it has definitely impacted us in many different ways.
I think there is a good, even a good thing. It's like, it's almost, there's a difference between just being a different person and then having a mask that reveals a different side of you.
Yes.
Because again, our conversation is based on how do we deliver value. So I'm not going to talk to you about the weather. I'm not going to talk to you about what you did last Friday or any of that. Because that just doesn't provide the right value. But that doesn't make you or I any less authentic. It just means we're gearing what's best right now for the audience from what we actually are. And a lot of our messaging is about authenticity. It's about the best thing you can do for your own well-being is just being authentic. And authentic isn't just being you. It's trying to be your best you. It's always trying to go for improvement, because that growth compounded with your own character, that's what's best for you at the end of the day. And so that's where it's really hard, because I've done it, and I'm assuming that you've definitely done it. There's been times where you do interviews and you can't release them because you're like, I don't feel that it's right to put this out because this isn't who we are. And again, you might say that's a tough decision and you wasted someone's time, but it's your call to make. It's your decision to make. And if your real value is trying to provide a great experience for your listeners, you are obligated to do what you feel is best. It's kind of this idea of business, the fiduciary duty to shareholders. Like, you have to do what's best for the shareholders. It's the same way in podcasting. You have to do what's best for the listeners. And that looks different in many ways, but it's like, if you're trying to deliver an authentic message with people who are authentic, it's your obligation that if you bring people, those people are authentic. And if they're not authentic, either you don't bring them on or you don't publish it. But then again, there's like the flip side of the downside is, of course, if you have people and they're not great, you're wasting time, which is again where your situation is, because you've seen that. But then the flip side of the better part of that is, like, it's great when you have someone that's authentic, because the conversation flows that much better. Because anyone that's gone through the experience, especially of starting a business and has done it for more than 3 years, the connection that you have is kind of instantaneous, where you're just super excited about the conversation. It's almost like a philosophical discussion where it's like back and forth and you're not even thinking. And I have this a lot of times, even now, where when I get in front of the camera and I'm speaking to someone that truly believes in what they're saying and has just gone through the steps and iterations over and over again, a lot of my conversation just comes out of this intuitive notion of what to say. There's no thoughts going on. There's nothing else that I'm thinking about. There's no idea I'm pondering. It's like me and Kevin are talking. This is what I feel should be said. Mm-hmm. And then again, when I look at the time, this time's passed. So Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who is a Polish psychologist, not philosopher, wrote this book called Flow, coined the flow state. Athletes call it as being in the zone. And I've recognized that this is usually what the state is. And I think, and you would probably have this as well, just given how much time you do podcasting. Like, if you didn't have, and I think podcasting would be a lot more time consuming than it is for you. You know, it is time consuming, but it doesn't feel as much as it is sometimes. Yeah. Not all the times. I can definitely guarantee sometimes it's heavy. But the reality is that when you have authenticity, you have the opportunity for the flow state. And when you have the flow state, you have the ability to be your best you when you need to be. And you don't even recognize it. And there's no thinking going on. There's nothing in the back of your mind. There's nothing like, oh, I need to go do this later. It's like, I am here. I can enjoy this. I can do what is my best work yet. And I don't even have to think about it. And that beauty in conversations is a value that I believe is very uncaptured. But again, it's one of the hardest things to do, especially in content creation, because the focus and effort required that needs to go into that is a lot more than people are willing to pay.
And the focus that's required to actually download that in terms of gaining the consciousness from what you're hearing, it's not going to be a 30-second clip on TikTok. That's just not going to do it. So that it's a big investment for you to say, okay, you know what? I trust that this is a valuable conversation between two humans are really connected and they're connected to themselves. Let me sit through this hour and a half or whatever it may be. I understand that too. That's a challenge. Believe it or not, Isaac, I probably don't hit flow as much as you'd think. And one of the reasons is my business partner has no concept of time whatsoever. He is the guy who he's not thinking of time. He's thinking 10 years from today. He'll get lost in a podcast episode and be late to his next meeting. I don't ever, ever, ever do that. So I have actually found it difficult at times to find flow because I'm the logistics guy. And usually, much like today, I am back to back to back to back with no time in between meetings. So if I don't stay on top of that, you can't always count on the other person to do it for you. So sometimes it is hard for me to find flow because there are so many constrictions within my schedule that it's challenging to just let it go.
That's a good flip side. Obviously it's advantageous, especially when you have to keep things on track. Do you sometimes wonder if you could get more flow, or like, do you ever think that you should try and work on that? Or do you think things are good as the way they are?
I like them the way they are because we've talked, Alan and I have talked, and he's like, you should just try to get in flow. And I said, Alan, if I just try to get in flow like you, we would go off the rails because we would just be doing 3-hour interviews every time. And you'd be late to your meetings because I'm usually telling you we got 1 minute left. I kind of enjoy the mayhem of that. There's a little piece of me that enjoys looking at the clock, knowing that if the next question isn't the last question, I'm going to have to do some magic. I enjoy that. But there are times where I do find flow. In the gym, I go to the gym first thing in the morning. I'm very much in flow. There's nothing else. I'm not thinking about anything. I write music. I do rap. I rap occasionally. I find flow in that too. So there are places where I find it. It's usually just not podcasting. When I'm a guest, it happens sometimes, but probably not as much as you'd expect. No.
See, but that's also a fair answer because I think you've recognized with your business partner that, again, you two aren't the same person, not even in just the character and personality sense, but like your responsibilities and what you best offer to the business are different. And so while it might be great for some people like myself, you know, it's not an every time thing. And it's sometimes like you have to be in a position where you're like, hey, we need to do this. Because again, if you can have a team of 20 people that are on flow state, but if they're not like willing to like break out of it, like, oh, we need to go to this direction, you can be aimlessly pursuing one thing because you're enjoying it so much that it's kind of like, oh, we need it to go here. You know, it's like if you're driving, you got one person that can be driving and hopefully they enjoy driving if they're driving for like an 8-hour road trip. But if the person next to them needs to be on that GPS, like, oh, you got to make a turn here, because if they're not, you're going to go, you know, if you're trying to go to this area and you're over here, you're not in the right destination. So the argument then becomes too, making sure that you have the people that are in the right kinds of roles. And I think that's not even just in business, that's in life. You know, you want to have the right people in the right positions, your partner, whatever they're supposed to be for you. If it's a support system, if it's an entire partner that does things with you, if it's someone that just motivates you, if they're a person that does this, you know, it's the needs that have to be met for you to perform at your best. Because I fundamentally believe that when you're at your best, when I'm at my best, that's when we offer the most value to the people around us, right? You focus on your house first, you get your things in order, and then you can go about the world and change. Because I don't believe that I can help people change their lives or improve their lives if I don't have my own life in order. I can't be telling someone else to go do something and I don't do any of the stuff I'm telling them. And so that to me is a fundamental concept of how do you actually help people the way you want to help them and do the things that you're telling them to do, because you're trying to help everybody by just helping yourself to then help them, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. Do you ever feel the pressure of that? I said that on a podcast recently where sometimes it almost feels like I'm not allowed to have a day off, and not by anybody, not by the audience. Just it's me. It's my thought that I'm out here talking about self-improvement, peak performance, working on your ego, vulnerability, and sometimes that gets very heavy where I feel like I cannot miss in real life. You ever experienced that?
Yeah, I think for people like us that have this high standard, it's hard to kind of be this, in a sense, kind with yourself and allow yourself to like relax and stuff like that. Like, that's definitely a harder problem for us to have than not work hard enough. And there's a flip side. There's people that have the other problem where they're not willing to do work hard enough, and they have no problem being kind to themselves. But in my sense, it's a good thing. Just you have to make sure you know how to control it properly, because you never want to be delusional in who you are versus what you're telling people to be. And that's the important thing too, because our primary focus is to help people unlock a better version of themselves, shatter limiting potential, as we say it. And you can't do that realistically for a long period of time if there's a disconnect between what you're trying to help people do and what you're doing yourself. Because if you're not doing it yourself and you are looking at these people faces after faces, calls after calls, clients after clients, and every single time you're like, I'm telling them to do this, but I haven't been working for the past 2 weeks, that's going to eat up at you. And if you find this job, what you do, meaning, if you find the business meaningful, it's not going to be meaningful for much longer if you have that disconnect. And the flip side too is like, you don't want to go down a rabbit hole. It's like, oh, I got sick and I had this terrible disease and I'm out for a day and now you're a terrible person. That's right. The flip side where you have to be like, hey, like, I didn't have a great day today. I felt horrible. I'm going to make sure I feel better so I can get back into it and do it. And so it's these kind of components where everything has a flip side. Everything has an upside. Everything has a downside. But how do you focus on the upsides and mitigate the downsides? You just have to move in that net neutral decision where it's like, it's not about solving your weaknesses. It's about making sure they don't come back and they hinder your progress. And it's also not making sure that when your strengths blow your ego out of proportions, it's also saying, we did great work. Let's continue moving forward. Because I find the most effective people, they're the people that can win a championship or they can get this business milestone or go get listed publicly. But at the same time, that's not their continually going. They might celebrate. They might do a toast. They might enjoy the night. Yeah. But the next day, it's back to it. They don't ride on the wave of their past successes. They focus on what comes next.
Yeah, well, to your original point, it's not about that goal usually. That goal is just a place on the way to the ultimate goal. I've been having a lot of conversations with clients, especially new clients, because I was under the assumption for a long time that every client that would come to me and look for help with their podcast wanted to be a full-time podcaster, just pretty much do what we're doing. And I started asking this very powerful question that's been very helpful. I say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much time, energy, and effort do you have to put into the podcast? And what are you willing to do and not willing to do? Because I'm realizing now more than ever that not everybody wants to work 16 hours a day to work on their podcast or whatever it may be. And the ability to lead someone is directly connected to your clarity around what they want to be led to. And that's a very, I don't want to say a new distinction for me, because I think I've known that at a pretty deep level. But now I'm starting to understand sometimes you just got to ask somebody what they want. And if they're vulnerable and they feel safe with you, they'll tell you the truth. Sometimes they'll mirror you too. But that's a really important lesson I've learned too over the last few months.
What do you think has been your biggest struggle in coaching other people? Because I'm just curious to, like, it's always interesting for coaches, like, what's their biggest struggle that they've had over the years?
Imposter syndrome. I had a call today with a gentleman who at one point had a $77 million real estate portfolio. It's like, I haven't handled that level of success yet. I don't know if I have the right answer for you. That's starting to go away. But that's been the biggest thing for me. Even in the very beginning, it was just I didn't feel like I could add enough value. Even if somebody gave me a raving testimonial of, my goodness, Kevin, it was an amazing call and he's helped me so much, there was always this voice inside of my head that would say, you didn't do that well. And not from a constructive place of, okay, you can do better. More of a deconstructive, you're never going to be good enough. That. And I think it all stems from being abandoned as a child by my father. That had to have some role in low self-worth and low self-belief. But yeah, imposter syndrome and lack of belief in my ability to deliver value would be the two big ones.
It's interesting because in Greek mythology, they had this idea of every great hero had a fatal flaw. Sometimes it was like hubris, like this sense of pride that they could do everything. And there was many different fatal flaws. But what I find interesting is it's usually consistent, not in just one realm. Usually there's more areas where you just kind of feel like, is this really for me? Like, is this like, is what I, everything I have, like, do I deserve this? You know, and it comes from a point of like, I think when you understand it too, there's, it becomes more clear that you can start to try to remedy and solve it, because the solution is hard to find sometimes. And sometimes you can find a solution, but implementing it's the actual hard part. But once you know what it is, it becomes easier to kind of step back from the day-to-day and the problems and be like, you know, maybe I don't have this, but at the same time, I'm not trying to tell him how to better his portfolio. I'm helping him in a mindset sort of way, you know, and it gets back to this point. There's one person that I think has done a very good job of this over the years. I don't know if are you familiar with Tim Grover?
Yes.
Yeah. So Tim Grover's done really well done because, again, he's coached world-class athletes. Tim Grover is not a world-class NBA player. He did not perform to the level of Michael Jordan or Dwayne Wade. But what is he coaching them for? One, he's making sure the body's fine. That was his main function. But the mentality. He knew that he had ways to deliver the mentality. And even still, even if it was like they might be mentally stronger, it wasn't about the mental strength. It was improving their own mental strength. And sometimes the most common solution I've seen to imposter syndrome is that, again, the double down on the strengths and the focuses of what someone's good at or what you're good at. But at the same time, they almost rely more on intuition. Like, if I have all this experience on shaping mindsets of stuff that I haven't done, what can I use them for to improve them? Like, you almost use what they've given you and what they have and the experiences that they have, and you structure this 3D model in your head of, like, if I were to tell them what ways that can improve, and then you add information that you already have, then you give them back that 3D model. Because sometimes it's not even that you tell them the game-changing advice, but that you know how to be a good and effective sounding board that asks the right questions, that allow them to discover the answer themselves. Because the biggest thing, too, that sometimes is missing, is you can't be more desperate for your client's success than they are. Because that never works out. Because you'll be unhappy with their progress, because you feel they can be doing better. And they'll either be frustrated because they don't see results because they want them quicker, or they just won't be committed to it. And so they're always kind of like, eh. And that, I think that's super demotivating for any coach. But it's just interesting, those problems that really arise for different people for what goes on, you know?
I don't know if I will ever and if I want to ever not experience imposter syndrome. Yeah. Because for me, I do think it's positive. Where we are today is way further along than I ever thought we would make it. So it makes sense that I'm having identity level issues with what we have. But I know that's going to go away because it's gone away at every other level. And then we just go to the next level and rinse and repeat. So for me, I think I've been able to actually use it constructive. But that's because I always take action. If I didn't take action, that probably wouldn't happen for me. My ability to execute is very high. So my awareness was the problem. But the second I get a new awareness, I can usually take a new action. Somebody gave me feedback, some feedback on something I was saying on the podcast. And the next episode, it's like, all right, that's done. I don't do that anymore. That's done. We don't do that anymore. Awareness was my biggest issue. The podcast I started originally was called Hyperconscious. The Hyperconscious Podcast, because for me, awareness was the problem. I can execute and I can implement, but the awareness, the knowing what to do, that was always a real challenge for me. So the further I get, the more I know. And then, yeah, I don't know if imposter syndrome will ever go away. And I don't care if it does. I'm okay if it doesn't. At this point, I don't know how many coaching calls, thousands of coaching calls. And it's better than it's ever been, especially with certain clients. But as other clients come through the door, it's different. But it's very humbling. It keeps me humble.
Yeah, you're not comfortable going to the next stage, and then you get comfortable, and then right as the time you get comfortable, you go to the next stage. And so again, that's where really what it becomes, that notion. One thing I will ask is, do you ever feel that imposter syndrome has hindered you from like performing at your best or helping coach people at your best ability?
No, because I feel at a deep level that I always have something to prove. So in my mind, I always want to add value. And I think it's that thought of, I'm not going to be valuable enough, so let me overdo it. Let me do it as much as I can. Just like I used to do a lot of logistics for one of the companies I used to work for, because I used to do a lot of driving and I'd have to reverse engineer how to get from Boston, Massachusetts to New York at a certain time. And because of that, I was hyper-focused on making sure I added in enough time here. So I think sometimes scarcity can create abundance if you use it as inspiration, motivation, necessity, accountability, but it does require the action. So no, I think it actually helps me because I will over-prep. My business partner used to under-prep. I used to over-prep. We drove to 5 and we helped each other figure out what the most effective way to do it was, but I still probably over prep, honestly.
But I think there's where you become a case study of, in a sense, imposter syndrome is a weakness, but it's now one of your great strengths, because you know, understand that if I have something to prove, this client's going to get everything that they need to get and maybe even more so. because yeah. I feel that I have to overdeliver in order for me to feel that I'm doing a good enough job. And so that's where the example becomes. Like, again, what are you actually doing to mitigate the weaknesses? Because like you said, you're not trying to get rid of it. And because you're not trying to get rid of it, you can use the other strengths, like you mentioned, like execution. I find it very interesting because my biggest strength starting out was always awareness. And so execution was more my problem. And it's funny because you know, you try so many things when you come from an awareness perspective because you're like, oh, this could serve better this, or I could do this better, or this would help someone else better. But then what really happens is, oh, I don't know how to actually implement this. And it's not even that I don't know how to implement. It's like you try all this time of like iterating and testing and moving things. And by the time you've done that, you spend all this time on like R&D and nothing's actually gone to market and stuff like this. And so sometimes it's also like when you're coming from this perspective, it's, you know, you have to be willing to fail forward and really put things and test things to the people you're actually trying to sell to. And that's a business perspective. And coming from a personal perspective, it's, I can study myself in all the things and all the ways that I am, but how am I when I actually put myself in the environments that I'm studying and know myself to be in? Because one thing is picturing it, another thing is being in it. And so that's where I find it very interesting because, again, you have to understand the strengths and weaknesses that come with the types of persons and personalities that you are.
Are you a ready, aim, fire? Are you a ready, aim, fire? What is your syntax for that?
I would honestly say just ready and probably stay on the aim for a little bit. And then go with the fire. I'm never unprepared necessarily to go in a situation. Like if there's something that I can do or if there's an opportunity to be had, I'm there. I don't have to think about it. Like if it's a value add to where I'm trying to go, I'm not indecisive. So I'll say, boom, that decision to do it has been made. Now, when I'm in the field, it's like, where's my best scope? You know, do I want to go this way? Or am I going to go this way? And it's not indecision per se, but it's like, I want to have a nice clean shot. Like, I don't want to be shooting blindly, trying to hit a target. I'd rather go for the bullseye straight away. So it's kind of sticking on that aim before the fire. So that's where the compounding of like the strength of not of being decisive, the weakness of I want to take a very good shot because I don't want to waste time or just go down a path that isn't for me. I want to start out strong, which is a strength and a weakness, like we've mentioned. You know, there's both the flip sides, and then the fire is kind of like, okay, I'm at where I want to be, and then I fire. So I think my solution to that has been more of, again, I'm already ready. You know, like again, I have that decision made. But when it comes to the aim, it's get close to the target, shoot, and then figure out what's actually going on in the world. Because by the time you readjust the aim on something, the wind could have changed, the light could have changed, even the target could have moved. And so it's understanding that the more you wait around for theoretical things to fall in place, the more the reality around us moves around. So the winds and the target could have shifted in reality. So by the time the theoretical falls in place, the reality's changed. So now the theoretical doesn't actually apply anymore. And all that time, while you could have learned something, hasn't actually borne fruit on anything. So I think one of the greatest strengths that someone who lives in the theoretical has to understand, it's sometimes it's just about testing. Sometimes it's just going into it, understanding that the plan isn't perfect, but perfection is never the goal. It's testing what works and improving what works and continuing to fail forward. Because I think some of the biggest companies that have done this well, like Facebook, like Google, their strategy is all about implement and then figure out what went wrong and then fix what went wrong and continue moving. Because that forward direction of testing in real time allows you to see response in real time and get feedback that you don't get behind closed doors or closed environments. And so I think that's one of the biggest catalysts for someone that comes from an awareness then execution perspective. And then again, if we're going to yours, execution then awareness perspective, it's understanding, is this move most aligned with who I want to be? It's that breath before you pull the trigger, because that allows you to be more not more perfect, but it allows you to be more precise in what you're trying to do. Some of my favorite Romans, Cato and Marcus Aurelius talked about this. Cato said, I only speak when I am certain that what I'm about to say isn't left better unsaid. And so I think for execution than awareness, that's a good mojo where it's kind of like, let me just take a second, pause, just a brief second, nothing more, nothing less. Brief second, pause, is this right? Cool, it is, go for it. And then if it's awareness and execution, Marcus Aurelius talked about, you know, this idea of the comfort of the bed and how it wakes up and you feel nice, but then you have to remember you have a purpose to go carry out and you cannot delay. You cannot waste time when you can go out and do the work, go in the world and do the things that you said you wanted to do. And so again, it's all about understanding who you are. Regardless of where you come from, awareness first, then execution, or execution, then awareness, how do you look at where you are now, the person that you are now? And if you want to get to a certain position, ask yourself, what things do I need to do about the strengths and weaknesses that I have in order to go from here to here?
Yeah, and you can look back on your past. I think that's always beneficial. I'm really good at getting trains rolling. I don't necessarily improve the train. But I will get, if you give me a track and you give me a train, I can usually get it rolling. And then unfortunately, sometimes I just walk away and then start another train. Again, having a business partner who's the opposite has been very, very beneficial for me. And I've learned both of that as well. But when I was going to do a bodybuilding show and I hired a coach, like in my mind, I don't know what I'm doing. The exercise part's going to be fine. And yeah, I'll probably be very hungry. But the first thing he said to me was, if you want to win, you'll suffer more than anyone else. And that was the awareness. It was an amazing piece of awareness. If he didn't say that, and he said, well, you could probably win, but you might be hungry every once in a while, I would think I was doing something terribly wrong because I was hungry all the time. So I think sometimes awareness is a valuable compass for when it comes to setting expectations. And that's helped me a lot too, set expectations based on awareness, not on lack of awareness or not on just lack of information. Awareness for me has been the unlock. I'll take action. I love taking action. I love doing stuff. I'm probably like a ready, fire, aim, probably more than anything else.
Yeah, and I think that's where you have to, again, come from this perspective. There's no right way of doing things. There has been people that have succeeded from all aims, from all types of readies, all types of fires. And the messaging is clear. It's how do you take advantage of your natural state of being and improve it again so you're not messing up those wrong things? Are you spending too much in one category or spending too little in another category? And that's where it's this idea of sculpturing. You want to alter and improve the shape of the things that you're already doing. You don't need to change the material, or you don't need to change what's already been changed. And so it's this appreciation for the journey, like you said, looking to the past, the journey that's gotten us to where we are today. But it's the understanding that until our time is up, there's no unfinished business. The piece isn't finished until our time is finished. And the more we can continue building these things, not just with our own perspective, but taking in other perspectives, the more we improve. And things aren't meant to be perfect, but that's the beautiful thing about the life. It's the journey. It's the process that evolves things. And the things that you'll be thinking about in 5 years may build upon the things you're thinking about now, but they're going to be different. And it's going to be the same for me. And that's the beautiful part. But if we don't do what we need to do now, we're not going to have the caliber of thoughts that we want to have and the caliber of results and actions and all these and the impacts in the 5 years. And so if our message really is to help people become the best versions of themselves, become the hero of their own stories, in whatever capacity we say that, is it not our then responsibility to do everything in our power to make sure that our growth is congruent to the growth that we want to have and the impact that we want to have in reality?
I would say so, yeah. I would say so. You must lead by example, and you must know in order to teach. And there's also a level of empathy that you can pass on or you can show when you've done the work, right? I have a level of empathy and appreciation for your journey because I don't know what it was, but I can imagine based on what mine was, what yours was. I see you. I see you to the degree I can see you. And I think that's another reason why doing the work is so important. It helps build empathy. I've had a lot of people ask me, do you ever get frustrated when there's people in your life that don't want to grow to the level you do? And I say, no, because I have empathy for the understanding that it's really challenging. And unless you have a massive goal that forces you to do it, you just be banging your head against the wall for no reason. I have empathy for that. I understand it's hard. I don't know why you'd ever want to do this if you didn't have goals that forced you to. So I think that's a very positive perspective that I've gained from having that empathy and just looking and saying, okay, I see you. I can see what you're doing and I can imagine what that is like, but I also can see someone who isn't as into things as I am, and I can understand why they don't want to be. Holding that duality has been very good for me, for perspective and empathy.
I have a friend, he's up in New York, and he has a couple of his own businesses that he runs. And a piece of advice that he told me once is he told me that he doesn't believe that most people have what it takes to be an entrepreneur, because most people would be miserable if they tried to do it. And we have this wave of culture that promotes entrepreneurship as like the only way. And anyone that works a 9-to-5 is just part of the corporate ladders. They're in the rat race, and they're not contributing to their own need for self-growth. But the reality is that most people are better off in those positions, not because they're lesser than, but because it provides the sanctuary of stability and not responsibility for the employment of others and stuff like that. Because if you get down to the nitty gritty, even when you start a business and it's only you, what you have to understand is you are now the perpetrator of your income. Like, it's not you have this job to do and you get paid. It's you can do the job 10 times better than you used to do, but nobody cares about you yet, so you still don't make any money. On the flip side, you can have the ones where you have more leverage. So the amplification of responsibility is much different in that game. But then let's say you start hiring people. Now you have a team of 5 or 10 people that work on your team. They now rely on you. So if you have down months where you don't have enough money to pay them, they have families to feed, and they came to work for you, right? They're working at your company. So it is your responsibility to make sure that they can go home and take care of their families. And that's another weight. And a lot of times this can crush a lot of people. This is a lot to handle. And not everybody should handle it if they don't want to handle it. But you and I are both willing to pay that price, and we're more than happy to pay that price. Not that it isn't heavy, but it's something that we believe is meaningful. So that's where the argument becomes again. Awareness isn't just about understanding, you know, the reality of everything, but it's also understanding that not everything that's real is for you. There's different realities that are perpetrated differently by the mentalities that we come into, because what makes you happy might not be the thing that makes me happy. What gives you meaning isn't the thing that gives me meaning. But if we both walk in those ways, like you mentioned, the empathy will both be able to see each other. Not because we understand necessarily that we've gone in the same paths or been on the same journeys, but because we understand that we both, at some point, came to terms with the price that we had to pay to go on the journey. And that there's some times where we look at the future and we see everything that could be, and we know, we believe we can get there, especially when we started to put the work in. But we're the only ones that see the vision. And what happens is once we get the results, everyone else is wondering how we did it. But the 4 years that we spent building out that vision was all in the shadows. And we were willing to do that. Most people don't see the shadows. They only see the light.
When my wife and I started dating, she said, "You have to make me a promise. You'll never force me to be an entrepreneur." And I said, "Absolutely done. I would not wish that on my worst enemy." And I said, "You have to promise me one thing. You'll never try to take away the podcast. Because this is who I am. This is who I am, and we have a really big goal and some many levels of ambition, and we're trying to change the world. And I don't expect anybody else to want to do that. So if you do, awesome. Good for you. Do you." But yeah, you got to figure out what do you need out of life? Do you need a lot of certainty? Maybe being an entrepreneur isn't it. Do you need a lot of variety? Maybe being an entrepreneur isn't it, especially if you're a podcaster like I am and you sit in the studio all day, every day. You really have to check in with your basic human needs in the order of them, because mine are very, I can eat the same thing every day. I'm just a simple dude. You give me a good gym session in the morning, 8 calls and some UFC at night, and then spend time with my wife and my cats. Pretty simple. Doesn't take a lot to keep me going, but that might be drastically different than you. If you're more variety driven, if you're more maybe family driven, if you're more travel driven. So yeah, I would second that very much. Awareness of understanding yourself also creates awareness of what to be doing in the world and how successful you'll be holistically, not just financially. You can go make a boatload of money and be miserable. That's not success for most people.
Yeah, it's absolute. So the last thing I will touch on today is we're just going to say 2 things each, and I'll start. It's going to be, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given by someone else, and what's the worst piece of advice that you've ever been given? And then after you share that, if you would just tell people where they can find you at, you know, what you're doing with everything that you're doing with the business and the offerings on the podcast, and then we'll close out. So for me, the best piece of advice that I've ever gotten is no one will understand what you aim to do as much as you will. And if you want something to become reality for your own life, you have to believe it 10 times more than your next closest person. And I believe it. You know, a lot of people have faith in, a lot of people that are in my life, which isn't like many that are very close, almost none, they have faith that I will become the person that I say I'll become. But they don't have faith in the vision because they don't understand the vision. It's hard to have faith in something that you don't understand to some degree. And so it becomes my responsibility to really have that. And so the best piece of advice is I just have to believe in it. Because they support me, but I have to support the vision. And so having them support me is great, but without me supporting the vision, it all comes crumbling down. And so just continuously remembering that, even when it gets hard, has been something that's been tremendously valuable. And I think the worst piece of advice is look at the numbers. People say the numbers don't lie, and that's true, and it's very true in business, but if you want to believe that you're going to get a certain level, you have to believe, if you want a certain level of success, that you're the exception to the rule and not the rule itself. Because looking at the number can also be very deteriorating, where it's like the possibility are so low. But if you have the self-belief and stop looking at the numbers, you're like, but I'm not every other person, so these odds aren't the same. Not that it won't be difficult, but I'm also willing to go more and more times. And if there's any possibility of success, the more and more times I go, the more chances I have of getting the possibility that is very slim. So that would be mine.
Very powerful. The best advice I've ever been given is big things start small. Big things start small, and don't underestimate how much can change in a year. My business partner gave me that in the very beginning and then showed me probably many examples of the fact that Google started small, everything started small. So big things start small. And then I would give two quick ones for the worst advice. One, I went to an event one time and they said, we're going to teach everybody how to just make a ton of money. And they said, I want everybody to add a zero to their pricing. And I laughed and I was like, all right, there's got to be some advice coming. And they said, no, this is it. I want everybody to add a zero to their pricing. Some people need to do that. Sure. For other people, that's a recipe for disaster. And I was talking to someone later and they lost their business after they did that because they thought that was the right advice for them and it wasn't. So that was very bad advice. And another piece of advice I get very often is you need to take it easy. And much to your point, that just isn't really in the cards for what we want to do. And I get my R&R every night, and that is me taking it easy, but I don't want to take it easy. I want to work, and I want to be fulfilled, and I want to add value. And if you loved what you did as much as I loved what I do, you might not want to take it easy either. But unfortunately, maybe you haven't found it yet, and I genuinely hope you do.
That's great. So where can people find you at? And what are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
Tell the people. You're good.
I forgot the last part. I went off. You can just look up Next Level University. Our podcast is on all the platforms. We're on YouTube. We do an episode every single day. So that's where you can find us. And then we have a lot of different stuff in our business. We have an app. We have one-on-one coaching. We have group coaching. We have live events, retreats, podcast services, social media services. I always suggest people listen to the podcast first because you'll get to know us at a deeper level. And if you find value in it, there's a bunch of other things for you. Whatever your self-improvement set point, whatever your financial set point, there is a place at NLU for you.
Well, Kevin, we appreciate your time. Everyone, you know how we close it out. Make sure you go see Kevin, see everything he's doing. Go check it out. Again, Kevin offers a lot of valuable stuff that can help you on your journey to become the hero of your own story, to shatter your limiting beliefs, and ultimately become the maverick that you're destined to be. You know how we close it out. Veni, vidi, vici. I came, I saw, I conquered. We hope you enjoyed this episode on the Isaac Velez Gonzalez Show, and we appreciate it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and share this episode. We are grateful for your support, and if you are serious about improving your life, check out our coaching at www.isaacvelezgonzalez.com. Until next time, that's all for today's episode.